This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
COVID relief inches closer. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka. On this Monday, March 8th, glad you could be with us. And here's what we have for you this hour.
After the Senate approved changes to a massive pandemic aid bill, the House takes up the modified measure this week.
New York's governor faces new accusations of sexual harassment and additional calls for his resignation from members of his own party.
Meghan Markle says she had suicidal thoughts while dealing with the royal family. Hear what she and Prince Harry told Oprah.
And officials in South Florida cracking down on spring breakers to avoid an outbreak of the coronavirus. Arian Campo Flores at the Wall Street Journal on restrictions like bars closing at midnight. The nearly $2 trillion pandemic relief bill could clear Congress this week after the Senate narrowly approved it over the weekend following a couple of changes to accommodate centrist Democrats. The Senate passed the measure early Saturday after 27 hours of debate. Among the changes led by West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin, weekly unemployment checks lowered from $400 per week to $300 per week. That benefit will now end in September, about a month earlier than provided under an agreement reached among Democrats.
I always try to work with my Democrat colleagues, my caucus, and my Republican friends. And there was an awful lot of input for over last month.
He was on ABC's This Week. A faction of Democratic senators joined all Senate Republicans to defeat a proposal pushed by Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders to increase the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. The House is now expected to hold a procedural vote on the bill tonight, with final passage slated for tomorrow. Economic lifeline or blue state bailout? Few elements of President Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill have drawn more fire from congressional Republicans than the $350 billion that's included to help cash-strapped states, localities, and tribal governments confronting the pandemic. More from Ledge King, Washington correspondent at USA Today. Ledge, what's up here?
Under the pandemic, obviously, there's been no sector of the economy that's not been affected and waylaid in some level. And the Democrats have tried to include states and cities and counties, for that matter, and tribal governments in the community of folks that are getting help. And the Republicans have said no all along. And when they controlled the Senate up until January, they were able to keep those out of previous stimulus bills. Now the Democrats see an opportunity. They say these cities and states have suffered. They've laid off people. They've expended their rainy day funds. They've cut back on all sorts of services. So they've lost all, and they've had to see their businesses close. So they've lost all this tax revenue. At the same time, they've had to stand up, pandemic aid for people. Assistance roles have swelled, and they've had to, in their own way, spend even more than they were counting on, while at the same time losing this money. So these cities and counties are in a bind, and that's what the Democrats are trying to address.
Yeah, I understand that principle, but I read something the other day, and I'm paraphrasing, but basically said that the worst case scenarios did not materialize for the vast majority of states in terms of budget because of things like stimulus money, where people were still able to spend and there was still tax revenue going in. So I understand the Republicans' arguments, but I'm also not a math major or a policy or budget expert.
Well, no, you're absolutely right, Gordon. Some of the most dire predictions have not come true. States have slowly begun, and cities and counties have slowly begun to reopen. And so some of the forecasts that you that were out there initially are not as bad as they are, but they're still down. In many cases, states are not certainly not seeing what they projected to have for 2021, the 2020-2021 year, which we're in. And so they may not have been as bad as initially forecasted, but they're still not where they ought to be. So these states, and it varies, obviously, from state to state. I mean, tourists, states that rely on a lot of tourism obviously got socked a lot worse than states that, you know, have a lot of, you know, have a big agricultural community, for example, or have an economy that's a little bit more immune to the kind of steps, the social distancing stuff that's happened. In addition, you have states that are all over the map on how much social distancing they're doing. We just saw Texas and Mississippi, for example, they're moving ahead with or getting away, getting rid of their mask mandates. And you have especially in the southern states, especially red states, they're a lot more aggressive about reopening their economies than blue states are, which is why the Republicans have derided this as a blue state bailout.
Right. Finish up with how some of this money breaks down for allocation purposes, the $350 billion.
Okay. So under the plan, about $195 billion of that, so most of it would go to states, about $130 of it to local governments, $20 billion for tribes, and $4.5 billion for U.S. territories. What's particularly, I guess, upsetting to Republicans is how among the states that money would be divvied up. For example, it would be based on a state's share of the total unemployment. Well, if you're a state that reopened the economy earlier, you have probably fewer people on the unemployment roll. And they're saying, well, why should we be penalized because another state moved too slowly or is not reopening up fast enough? So, you know, there's a fight over not just how the money in general, but how the money gets divvied up.
Thanks, Ledge King, Washington correspondent at USA Today. Pressure continues to mount for embattled New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who's facing growing accusations of sexual harassment. Fellow Democrats who lead the state legislature are questioning whether he can still lead effectively now that five women have come forward. The Wall Street Journal reports a former aide, Anna Liss, said Mr. Cuomo asked her if she had a boyfriend, called her sweetheart, touched her on her lower back at a reception, and once kissed her hand when she rose from her desk. She's the third former aide to the governor to make such an accusation.
You know, one vent at the mansion, there's a line where I take hundreds and hundreds of pictures. But I never, and I don't even think she said it, I never meant to make anyone feel unwelcome in any way.
Senate Majority Leader Andrew Stewart Cousins, who represents the city of Yonkers, says Mr. Cuomo must resign. In a call yesterday, Mr. Cuomo said he won't resign because of allegations. Coming up next, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle open up with Oprah. Dell's semi-annual sale is the perfect opportunity for a significant business upgrade. Save up to 45% on Dell computers built for business and powered by Intel Core processors. Plus, enjoy special pricing on Dell docks, monitors, servers, and more, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Speak to a Dell Technologies advisor today to find the right tech for your business with fast, free shipping. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. An interview by Prince Harry and the Duchess of Sussex is sending shockwaves around the world. Meghan Markle said she had suicidal thoughts after marrying into the British royal family and was asked about how dark her son's skin might be. In the CBS interview last night with Oprah Winfrey, Ms. Markle and Prince Harry attempted to explain why they left England for California after stepping away from their frontline official duties last year.
We have in tandem the conversation of he won't be given security, he's not going to be given a title, and also concerns and conversations about how dark his skin might be when he's born.
The rare airing of royal grievances opened a new chapter in the couple's breakaway from the British royal family. In the interview, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex described being cut off financially from monarchy. but they also took pains to describe a loving relationship with Queen Elizabeth II, Prince Harry's grandmother. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
With President Biden on the verge of his first big legislative victory, a key moderate Democrat says he's open to changing Senate rules that could allow for more party line votes to push through other parts of the White House agenda. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin says he wants to keep the procedural hurdle known as the filibuster, saying major legislation should always have significant input from the minority party.
I'm not going to go there until my Republican friends have the ability to have their say also. And I'm hoping they'll get involved to the point where we have 10 of them that'll work with 50 of us, or 15 of them that'll work with 45 of us.
But Manchin told NBC there are other ways to change the rules that now effectively require 60 votes for most legislation. One example, the talking filibuster, which requires senators to slow a bill by holding the floor, but then grants an up or down simple majority vote if they give up.
Number two.
The top two Democrats in New York's legislature have withdrawn their support for Governor Andrew Cuomo amid mounting allegations of sexual harassment and undercounting COVID-19 deaths in nursing homes. But Cuomo again said he won't resign.
People are free to make allegations, but then we also have a process of due process where people get the facts and then they make a determination.
Number three.
The fate of a former Minneapolis police officer who pressed his knee into George Floyd's neck as the black man said he couldn't breathe will be decided by 12 Hennepin County residents, picked after extensive grilling about their views on police and the justice system. Jury selection begins today in the trial of Derek Chauvin, who is charged with second-degree murder and manslaughter in Floyd's death. Picking a jury is expected to take at least 3 weeks. Anthony Fauci, chief medical advisor to President Biden, says the number of vaccine doses available will sharply rise in the coming weeks following federal approval of a third coronavirus vaccine. The U.S. is now administering at least 2 million shots a day. Nearly 88 million doses have been given. Good news if you're a whiskey drinker. A new deal negotiated between the U.S. and Britain will see a temporary suspension in tariffs placed on certain goods, including scotch and other whiskey drinks. Starting today, the U.S. will suspend tariffs placed on direct exports from the U.K. for at least 4 months. Other affected items include wine, luggage, cheese, olives, and aircraft.
I want to like whiskey, but I can't drink it straight.
No.
I need soda or like something citrusy in there to help out.
Too much.
I'm trying. Thanks, Jen. If you like what you hear on our show each day, there's good news, especially if you have something to say or something to add to the conversation. You can now find us live every Wednesday at 2 o'clock Eastern on the Stereo app. Stereo is the app for live social conversations where you can talk to us directly, ask questions, make comments, or just listen to what your fellow listeners have to say. Just download the Stereo app from your favorite app store and be sure to follow me at stereo.com/GordonDeal so you're notified every time we go live. That's stereo.com/GordonDeal and you'll be ready to join in. You'll hear brand new exclusive content about topics we typically can't discuss on the show. And best of all, we get to hear from you. Got a hot take on the latest food trend? Great. Have a question you've always wanted to ask? Perfect. Join us every Wednesday at 2 o'clock Eastern on Stereo. And follow me at stereo.com/GordonDeal. That's stereo.com/GordonDeal. Thanks for being with us. How do employers handle paying employees like hourly workers when a business is closed due to natural disaster, like the ice storm, for example, that recently brought Texas to its knees? In-depth analysis from David Barron, labor and employment attorney with Cozen O'Connor. He's based in Houston. David, take us through this.
With disasters like the recent ice storm, I mean, really the issues are pay is a big one, you know, how to pay people when they're not able to work. And then, you know, just time off is important. I mean, you may have people who lost power so they could have, you know, medical devices and medicine that they're unable to refrigerate. So really those are the two main buckets to be talking about.
All right. So when something like this happens and employees are out of the office, maybe they cannot work or unable to work because of power issues, things along those lines. Can an employer force them to spend vacation days or other paid time off, sick days, things like that?
Yeah, in terms of PTO and sick days, vacation, et cetera, generally, at least in Texas, you know, the employers have great flexibility in terms of how to set those policies. In terms of pay, it really depends on whether they're non-exempt or exempt. For a non-exempt employee, you know, paid by the hour, They don't work, they don't get paid. So really, they would just be looking at things like PTO or vacation. For exempt employees, it's a little more complicated because they're paid on a salary. So if an exempt employee is ready and willing to work and the business is closed because of weather, then those folks have to be paid.
So what about a worker who simply cannot report to work?
Well, again, in that situation, if they were a non-exempt hourly worker, then there would be no obligation to pay that employee because they're not doing any work. You know, many companies would allow that worker to take, you know, some sort of PTO or vacation, or even require it, depending on the policy. Some companies do extra things like allow an employee to go into a negative balance, for example, or just out of the goodness of their heart, give them a snow day, you know, which wouldn't hit their actual PTO balance.
Right. So what if they are able to, say, fire up a laptop in an ice storm, or there's been power outages, lack of gas, lack of water, shortages of food, but they were told not to work, but they fired up the laptop and did some work anyway?
Yeah, so you know, the way the law works is if you have reason to know someone's working, you have to pay them. So obviously, if someone's working in secret and the employer doesn't know, there's no obligation there. But for things like email, you know, there would be usually some trace or record where the employer perhaps should know that they're working and then would have an obligation to pay them.
Yeah. We're speaking with David Barron, labor and employment attorney with Cozen O'Connor. We're talking about how employers can handle employee issues during a natural disaster like the one Texas recently went through. All this stuff should be in a handbook of some kind or in writing somewhere? Is any of it understood?
You know, ideally, things like this would be written down. You know, we're pretty familiar with hurricanes down here in Texas, yeah. So at least on the Gulf Coast. So a lot of these things, these rules and policies are already in place because of the sort of the annual risk of hurricanes. So, and I'll say this, I mean, with the pandemic, a lot of people have been working from home. So again, a lot of these issues are not new to the Gulf Coast area.
Thanks, David. David Barron, labor and employment attorney with Cozen O'Connor.
For the ones finding new ways to ensure the job always gets done. For the ones wearing many hats. For the ones who are hands-on, even from far away. And the ones keeping business moving forward. We are Grainger, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, with 24/7 support and experienced staff at over 250 local branches. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We don't take sides. We deliver the information you need to start your day. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning, with Gordon Deal.
Hey, glad you're with us. Welcome into Monday, March 8th. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. The House takes up a tweaked version of COVID relief this week. More allegations of inappropriate behavior by New York's governor. Meghan Markle tells Oprah she had suicidal thoughts thanks to treatment from the royal family. Growing concerns in the U.S. about younger kids learning to read during virtual learning. A Baptist pastor from Missouri is on leave after asking his congregation, why do some women let themselves go after getting married? And a Pennsylvania town shows love to its UPS driver. That story in about 20 minutes. For nearly a year after some Florida spring breakers refused to let the coronavirus interrupt their parties and help trigger a wave of lockdowns, Miami Beach is bracing for a fresh crop of revelers. It's a story by Ariane Campo Flores, reporter for The Wall Street Journal based in South Florida. Ariane, what's going on there?
You know, it's kind of a slow buildup. The spring break period here that officials have kind of blocked out is really long. It runs from February 22nd to April 12th. That's what they have called the high impact period. But what they view as the peak periods are coming up later this month. So like the next three weekends is what they're seeing as the highest, the most influx of people, the most activity. It's when they're going to be kind of patrolling most aggressively. In reporting this story recently, I was just out kind of wandering around South Beach and kind of checking out different avenues and venues. And it was like moderately busy. You know, there were definitely some early arrivals. There was like a mix of younger kind of college age kids combined with just older folks who are, you know, probably escaping the cold for similar reasons.
Yeah.
And, you know, some restaurants and, you know, pedestrian strips were pretty congested. Other places were, you know, a bit more mild. So it was kind of a mix. But the officials here are definitely expecting a big crowd this year.
And based on what, I guess, because a lot of colleges, including my son's, have canceled spring break. There is no spring break. But are they anticipating kids are going to take off anyway or work remotely?
Yeah, I mean, a really large number of universities have canceled spring break. So that was kind of one of, you know, a wild card in all this that officials were trying to, you know, trying to decipher or figure out what the impact of that would be. But, you know, first of all, like, there's a lot of students are learning remotely anyway, right? So they can be anywhere to do their classwork. The other thing is maybe, you know, folks will come for like long weekends. Like, I interviewed a group that included some students who had come down basically for like a 4-day weekend. So they tacked on a few days beyond Saturday and Sunday and came down for a short jaunt. But the reason that they're expecting a large influx is, you know, first of all, I mean, you can, you know, there have been numerous student groups at campuses who have said, you know, we disagree with what the administration has done. We need our spring break. We need a mental kind of break from you know, this monotony.
Yeah.
So I think there's some you know, rebellion involved. But also, you know, this winter has had some really brutal storms up north. The flights down here are very cheap. Hotels are cheaper than usual. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that make it really attractive to come down, and just judging by kind of advanced bookings among the hotels, those who kind of track these numbers in the hospitality industry were expecting a big showing.
Mm. We're speaking with Ariane Campo Flores, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called "Fearing COVID-19 Surge: Florida Officials Crack Down on Spring Breakers." There's a midnight curfew, right, in at least a couple of spots. What does that do to business or a young person's desire to be out?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's been a big deterrent. There's, you know, the city and the county are kind of limited in what they can do because of a state executive order that basically forbids, you know, cities from, like, shutting down businesses. So they're working with the tools at their disposal, which include a 12 a.m. curfew. You know, there are still rules on social distancing and on mask wearing. You know, they've added things for the spring break period, like no alcohol on the beach, you know, no inflatable devices, no coolers. So there are a number of rules that they put in place. The curfew is a big one because obviously a lot of nightclubs in South Beach don't even get started until after midnight.
Yeah,
and so the midnight curfew really limits them. And for that reason, many have not reopened.
Thanks, Ariane. Ariane Campo Flores, reporter at the Wall Street Journal in South Florida. Coming up next, a better way to justify our love of donuts. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday. It's time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, you can imagine it could be disconcerting for drivers to be riding under an overpass on the highway and see what appears to be a wall leaning over the roadway. So much so, in fact, that officials with the North Carolina Department of Transportation have been forced to respond, assuring drivers that they aren't driving into harm's way. The wall in question holds up a flyover bridge from Interstate 440 West to I-40 East in Raleigh and appears to be leaning over. But officials said the appearance is an optical illusion that resulted from the wall being built on a curve. The bridge was built last year and opened to vehicles in December. The DOT says officials have heard from drivers concerned about the wall's angle a few times since it opened, but that the illusion has no effect on the wall's integrity.
Oh, that's weird.
It's like the wall's, you know, going to collapse right on top of you.
Oh, man.
As you drive through.
Yeah.
Brand new wall, though. So okay. Everything should be okay.
Not a welcome sight.
We know optical illusions can be, you know, very powerful. I mean, anyone who goes to Disney sort of knows this one, that you know, the castle appears to be huge, right? The Disney castle, yeah, when you go in Florida, appears to be huge, but it looks much bigger than it actually is because of an optical illusion that they've sort of this whole forced perspective thing that they do. They make sort of the top of the castle smaller than the bottom of the castle. Same thing with the buildings, I guess, on when you walk down Main Street, to sort of makes everything appear to be much bigger than it is. So
I did not realize.
Yeah,
that.
See, you thought that that was a huge castle.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you walked into.
So it's not?
No.
Well, I'm not going anymore.
Yeah. Disappointing now.
Mike Cavan, by the way, for those who don't know, is a Disney expert at this point in his life.
Somewhat. Yeah. I'm trying to turn it now, you know, turn the page on that that part of my life now. We'll see.
Have the officials in North Carolina thought about maybe putting some sort of sign that says not or just
know.
An optical illusion?
We've
bridge
seen,
is
yeah.
safe or something?
We've done stories like this where they put up signs and nobody reads the signs. Remember that low bridge, the right. one that people kept crashing
yeah.
their trucks into? There's signs everywhere. Nobody seems to care.
I've got one that's a half mile from my house.
Yeah.
It's a train overpass.
Right.
And the sign clearly says 12 feet high.
Right.
That doesn't matter. The trucks that are 12 foot six, they'll try to
yes.
make it.
Traffic signs in New Jersey are suggestion, Gordon.
Yeah.
You know that.
The bridge always wins.
And with interest in cycling surging during the pandemic, let's hope we see some of these come to the U.S. Dunkin' opened its first ever bike-through lane in one of its locations in the Philippines. The restaurant also features a separate drive-through lane for cars. Dunkin' added the bike-through lane in the Philippines because of the country's large population of bikers. The chained-off lane features its own menu board and speaker for ordering. Cyclists can then ride up to the window to pick up their items. Riders of traditional bicycles, mopeds, and motorcycles can all use the dedicated lane. The coffee and donut chain didn't say whether it had any plans to add bike-through lanes at restaurants in the U.S. Still, cyclists from other parts of the world expressed enthusiasm for the idea on Twitter. One blogger noted a bike-through lane would be great for those mid-ride carbs.
Yeah.
You seem excited about
this. Well, I was just trying to calculate maybe how you could justify the donut with the bike ride.
Yeah.
Would 40 minutes do it per donut? Like a 20-minute ride to the Dunkin', have your donut, 20-minute ride home. And you've burned off the 400 calories of the donut, whatever it is.
I guess. I mean, all I know is those donuts, those little donuts that take like, you know, three bites to eat,
yeah.
Are surprisingly full of calories. I feel like you'd be surprised how far you have to ride to burn off just one of those donuts.
Maybe you're right. Toasted coconut all day.
Oh, yeah.
So many people have struggled with weight gain during the pandemic that the term COVID-15 has gained currency, right? A variation of the familiar freshman 15 weight gain in college. Their pets aren't far behind, it turns out. Among 1,000 dog and cat owners surveyed by Banfield Pet Hospital, 42% said their pets had gained weight during quarantine. The Wall Street Journal says fueling the weight gains for many pets are lockdowns and work-from-home schedules. While some people are taking their dogs for more walks, people are also surrounded at home by snacks, and every time we get one, we share with the dog. Taylor Rowland of Morristown, New Jersey, says her dog Lily has become a champion beggar. Over the past year, the German Shepherd Pit Bull mix has perfected the big puppy eyes. Lily discovered that if she cries when Ms. Rowland is on a Zoom call, she'll get a treat. Ms. Rowland says either she gives in and gives Lily a treat, knowing she doesn't need one, or she has a dog crying while she's on a call. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Democrats are beginning to look to their next legislative priorities after an early win for President Biden, with the Senate approving a $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief plan on a party line 50-49 vote. Final passage is expected tomorrow in the House if leaders can hold the support of progressives frustrated that the Senate narrowed unemployment benefits and stripped out an increase to the federal minimum wage of $15 an hour. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer was pleased with the passage.
When we say we want to do it with you, but if we can't do it with you, we'll do it without you. Now they know we mean it, and they know we're capable of doing it.
Number two.
In a wide-ranging interview aired last night, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle described painful palace discussions about the color of their son's skin, losing royal protection, and the intense pressure that led the Duchess of Sussex to contemplate suicide.
They didn't want him to be a prince or a princess, not knowing what the gender would be, which would be different from protocol, and that he wasn't going to receive security.
The interview with Oprah Winfrey on CBS was the couple's first since they stepped down from royal duties.
Number three.
President Biden has signed an executive order calling on federal agencies to expand voting access as part of his administration's efforts to promote and defend the right to vote for all Americans who are legally entitled to participate in elections.
Elected officials in 43 states have already introduced over 250 bills to make it harder for Americans to vote. We cannot let them succeed.
Biden announced the order in virtual remarks played before a breakfast in Selma, Alabama, which commemorated the 1965 Bloody Sunday crossing of the Edmund Pettus Bridge, where police beat black demonstrators fighting for access to the ballot box. Unopened letters, more than 300 years old, that were folded using mysterious techniques have now been read for the first time without opening them. Researchers at MIT have devised a system to read the letters, which were folded in a way that they became their own envelopes. Until now, the letters were opened by slitting them, which damaged the historic documents.
Whoa, weird stuff.
It is.
So they didn't have the glue back then?
No envelopes with glue.
No licking things back then? No. Yeah. Thanks, Jen. Dell's semi-annual sale is the perfect opportunity for a significant business upgrade. Save up to 45% on Dell computers built for business and powered by Intel Core processors. Plus, enjoy special pricing on Dell docks, monitors, servers, and more. All with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Speak to a Dell Technologies advisor today to find the right tech for your business with fast, free shipping. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Glad you're with us. A UPS driver has been moved to tears after his customers in Pennsylvania showed their appreciation in a big way. CNN says Chad Turns delivers for UPS in the small town of Dauphin, Pennsylvania, and is beloved by his customers, as seen in a video posted to Facebook by Adam Schickley. When Mr. Turns drove into a parking lot for what he thought was a pickup last week, he was greeted instead by a dozen residents clapping and yelling, "Thank you, Chad." Mr. Turns was so overcome with emotion, he pulled out a handkerchief to wipe his eyes. Residents say he's well known for his thoughtfulness and kindness. One woman said Mr. Turns often leaves treats for dogs when delivering packages. Jenny Schickley raised $1,000 for Mr. Turns. The group gave him the generous gift with a large card signed by members of the community. The town has a population of about 800. Mr. Turns says he'll pay it forward by continuing to provide the stellar service that he is known for. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. We hope that you enjoyed today's podcast. If we left you wanting more, you're in luck. There's exclusive content, including maybe you, if you follow us over to the Stereo app. Join us live every Wednesday at 2 o'clock Eastern, where we'll be discussing topics we typically can't get to on our regular program. And best of all, we get to hear from you, answering your questions and hearing your comments. Don't miss out. Download the Stereo app now and be sure to follow me at stereo.com/Gordon Deal. That's stereo.com/Gordon Deal.